Greeting, Earthlings. We have now taken over your radio.
Welcome to the Jayhawk Talk Podcast. This is episode 19. This is the first post-season episode of the Jayhawk Talk Podcast. I am Kevin. Joined with me, as always, is Andrew. What is happening?
Just getting ready for the Big 12 tournament coming up here in a couple days. It's an exciting time of the year in Kansas City. A
couple days to the Big 12 tournament, 6 days away from Selection Sunday. We are fully engulfed in the postseason as we have now wrapped up the conference season of the Big 12. We have a very big show today. A special guest will be joining us, Matt Norlander of CBSSports.com. Also the host of the Eye on College Basketball podcast from CBS. Very excited to have him. He will be coming up shortly. But first, Andrew, I got to get to something. I don't know if you know this, but KU this weekend brought home yet another Big 12 trophy. 9 straight. After that fantastic, amazing victory. Wait, we didn't win? Okay, we didn't win. But we still won a 9th straight. Tell me about this Baylor game.
Give me a second. I'm sweeping that game under this rug over here. If you just give me a second.
Yeah.
It's a pretty terrible game. Not something you want to close out the regular season with. I don't think anyone... I don't know if everyone's extremely worried about this game, but not really the way you want to leave. I'm not too enthusiastic about it.
So you're not enthusiastic, but does it scare you at all? Are there any red flags as a result of this game? You know, we were rolling for a while there. One, what was it, 6 straight or 5 straight, something like that, after the 3-game losing streak, and kind of laid an egg down in Waco. Does it scare you at all? Any red flags? Anything at all?
I don't think so. I think that you can walk away from this knowing that we went 14-4 in conference.
Right.
To share with K-State. Not what we wanted to do, but it happened. We know that this team is capable of, to use your words and to use everyone else's words, lay an egg.
Mm.
But they're also capable of just killing people. Just murdering it. So, I mean, we know you can do both. This team can do both. It's going to come down to which team shows up in the postseason. And knowing that Bill Self's on the bench, I think that this murderous serial killer team is going to come out. But that's just me. I think that this loss is really going to get him fired up going into the Big 12 tournament and then going into the NCAA tournament.
Well, you got to think it definitely has the team's attention now. If there was any remnants of having a big head after, you know, blowing through 5 or 6 games after that 3-game losing streak, I think they're a little bit more humbled now. As Bill Self said, he's definitely got their attention after that game. As far as the people saying that, you know, a red flag is there as a result of this game, I don't know. You hear some prognosticators saying things like any team that loses to TCU is inherently have a problem, or any team that goes on the road and loses by 23 to Baylor, who's not very good this year, you know, has an inherent problem and is not a tournament or a championship caliber team. And that's the kind of stuff that kind of drives me nuts, because as we've seen, especially this season, if not any season, teams go through bad losses, teams go through problems during the season. And certainly, I don't know, this team is capable of losing to anybody, but they can beat everybody. So I don't know. I'm not buying the narrative that this team has a problem. I think just like any other team right now in the NCAA tournament, if you don't come to play, you're going to go home. And so hopefully it is a reminder, if you're going to lose a game, that's the one to lose, not ones coming up here in the postseason. So I don't know. That's my thoughts. Here's another question for you. Do you think that knowing that they had won a share of the Big 12, at least took some pressure off of them and maybe, you know, let them be a little bit more carefree going into that game?
I think so. I think it's human nature that you would you know that there's not as much to play for. And, you know, when it comes down to in the trenches, trying to get that first initial punch, trying to, you know, knock them out at the beginning, just trying to get the game started. You don't have as much fire. It certainly can affect you. So I think it's just human nature. And I think that everyone will tell you, like everyone on the team will tell you it didn't matter. Bill Self will probably tell you it didn't matter. But I think it probably did. That being said, I don't know if we win that game under different circumstances. Baylor just seemed to be hitting their shots.
Yeah.
I mean, when, was it Corey Joseph hits three threes, the first threes of his entire career, you know things aren't going incredibly well.
Yeah, I'm with you. I think that human nature played a part of it. Plus, I mean, you heard all year the seniors saying stuff on the radio like, we don't want to be the team that doesn't or that ends the streak. You know, I tell the freshmen, we don't want to be the team that ends the streak. You know, Thomas and Tyshawn told us that last year, and now it's my job to tell the freshmen the same thing. And, you know, going into the game, they knew that they had won a share of the time. So I don't know. The pressure was gone. Maybe didn't have as much of a killer instinct, but I think you're right. I don't think Baylor was losing to anybody on Saturday, especially a KU team that really didn't come out firing on all cylinders. But I don't know. Let's move away from that Baylor game. What do you say? We sweep it under the rug, as you said, and talk about an accomplishment that I still don't think gets enough play in the national media, and that is 9 straight regular season championships for KU. What were you doing 9 years ago?
What was I doing 9 years ago? So the first championship we won was the Wayne Simeon senior year, right? So I would have been a sophomore at KU. I would have just been chilling in Lawrence, not doing too much differently than what I'm doing now, but not quite a bit different. But 9 years ago is a long time. I mean, people can barely remember 9 years ago.
Right.
I can remember the teams better than I can remember what happened in my life probably better than 9 years ago.
It's just hard to believe. Like, looking back, that 9 years is just something that it's just an incredible feat. I don't think that it's anything that really anyone's going to touch. I mean, we have a chance to catch to UCLA's 13. Obviously, nine's incredible, and you don't want to look forward, but it's just such an incredible feat. I don't really know how to put it into words exactly, but
well, and it's not just 9. It's also 11 of the past 12.
Yeah.
So, I mean, we had the little hiccup. I say hiccup. I think we finished second to Oklahoma State
right
in 2004. But 11 of the past 12, that's including two of the Roy years. Pretty good just for overall Kansas as a program.
And where would you put this Big 12 title? I guess in comparison to some of the other ones. So I guess what I'm trying to say is where does this one rank for you compared to some of the other ones that you can remember?
What do you mean? Like in terms of how good this team is?
No, I mean like just this, the everything that went into it. So, you know, we lost a bunch of scoring and we didn't have, you know, as it wasn't necessarily Bill Self's best team and, you know, those types of things, which maybe the more, you know, chances to win it were tougher this year compared to others or whatever you want to do. It doesn't matter. Whatever you want to put into it.
I don't know. I don't know if I can make that comparison because I think that every little thing you said is said every year in terms of we lost a bunch of scoring. This isn't one of Bill Self's more talented teams. That's said every year, but I always think it's kind of not true. I mean, we said that when Cole and Sharon took over. We said that when the Morris twins took over. We said that when T-Rob took over. Like, oh, this is not a talented team. But it always ended up being a pretty damn talented team. You know, one or two seed, winning the conference tournament. Or winning the conference and then doing well in the conference tournament in the tournament. So I don't know if I can put it up there with a specific one. I think Ben McLemore and how he's played certainly has made this one pretty special from an individual. I mean, that's something that you'll remember.
Right.
Something that I'll remember is some of those Ben McLemore baseline dunks, you know, Whiffy playing crazy defense and getting a bunch of blocks. So those are probably the things I'll remember. So probably up there. I mean, I don't like ties, but it's a pretty special thing this team did.
Well, let's talk about ties. As we've seen tonight on Twitter, I don't know if you've been following it, but K-State is having a pep rally right now, or just got finished up with a pep rally. They invited all the fans. They cut down the nets. They had a blackout. They did a sandstorm. All the magical things that you could possibly imagine went on inside the Octagon of Doom tonight in celebration of their shared title. How do you think... I guess let's talk about the comparison almost between the two schools celebrating their title. What's your reaction, I guess, first on K-State?
You know, it's good for them. I mean, that's something that K-State will do if they win a... I mean, it hasn't happened in over 30 years.
Right.
So, I mean, it's kind of a natural thing to throw a big party.
I give them a pass.
But how many times have we seen in the past several years that when a team does something like that, and that's – I'm specifically looking at Missouri last year when
– I know where you're going with this.
They have this huge party, you know, celebrating something that they haven't done in a while, you know, with everybody going in, shutting the lights off and having this music playing and people giving speeches and cutting down nets. This is after winning. This is Missouri after winning the conference tournament last year, and
right,
and K-State, you know, clinching a, or getting a at least half of the title in the regular season. How many times have we seen those teams just absolutely fade? You know, last year it was Missouri losing in the first round to Norfolk State, and then this year I don't know. Maybe I mean K-State's likely going to have to play Texas on Thursday. I wouldn't be surprised if they lose. Now, I want to see him in the title game, but it just seems like when you throw these parties, it diverts your focus on from the rest of the season.
Yeah, I'm with you. Now, I don't have a problem with celebrating, and I think, you know, it's tough to celebrate after losing. So, I'm okay with them taking a day and then doing something. It's kind of like we saw Indiana when they cut down the nets at, you know, 1 a.m. after losing in a game a couple days ago, and everyone kind of ridiculed Tom Crean for that, saying, you know, they lost the game and they lost on senior night, yet you're out there celebrating and cutting down nets. And, you know, I don't know. I don't really have a problem with that because it is kind of a, it is a celebration. And for instance, they asked Bill Self today, you know, the way that you won this share of the conference, does it demean it at all compared to some of the other ones? Or is it, does it feel like you kind of backed into it, or is it any less special? And he, you know, he immediately interrupted and said, no, I mean, we're not going to apologize to anybody for winning this, you know, winning this, this league. It's a terrific accomplishment. It's something that's, you know, obviously part of their game plan at the beginning of the year to try to go out and win this thing. And it's a really hard thing to do. I mean, it's especially this year, round robin, we're going to play everybody. So he said, we're not apologizing to anybody. This is something that we earned, and we are happy to have it. Obviously, they didn't want to share it, but I don't think it demeans it at all, and I'm kind of with Bill Self on that.
And I think that when you throw these types of parties, it shows you where your priorities are. For us, our priorities are we want to throw this kind of party in April, not in March after the conference season.
Right.
You know, we just don't do that. I mean, we acknowledge that it's a special thing, but realize that what we really want is ahead of us.
Well, let's not kid ourselves either, though. Like, KU, had they won, I guarantee they had the t-shirts and the hats and the trophy there. They would have done a locker room dance and everything at Baylor in Waco. So we know that KU is not like above celebrating. That's not at all what we're trying to say.
No, I'm not talking about celebrating. I'm talking about, you know, sandstorm dance parties in Bramlage Coliseum.
Well, the other thing, again, to be fair, I always want KU dance parties in the locker room. We've seen this year that dance parties are really the soul of this team.
Oh, yeah.
So more dance parties are fine with me, but not in a blackout to sandstorm. You will not see that happen anywhere near Lawrence, Kansas. Well, what do you say we move on to this Big 12 tournament?
Y'all ready for this? Come after me! I'm a man! I'm 40!
How about playing a little defense? You ever heard of that one, Stanley?
So the Big 12 tournament starts on Wednesday afternoon. It is, I guess they've had it in KC now for a few years in a row. It's the best, obviously, in KC. They tried to have it in Dallas and Oklahoma. It's just, it's the turnout's no good, and KC loves their hoops. It's going to be a lot of fun. Talk to me about, let's just talk about afternoon basketball. You know, Power and Light. Will you be down there on Wednesday and Thursday during the day, taking the day off, having a few beers, enjoying yourself with some Iowa State fans?
I'm going to go. I don't know about Wednesday. I'm going to have to see with my schedule. You know, Wednesday is probably not a huge priority for me, but I'm definitely going to be, it's a fun time. Especially with the Power and Light District being down there. It's going to be a good time. And, you know, Iowa State always brings a good crowd. K-State will probably bring a pretty good crowd this year. I'm not sure what the other crowds are going to be like.
It's Oklahoma weird not State, having Missouri.
Missouri, you know, West Virginia and TCU are not going to be able to replace those fan bases. But you know what? I don't care. That's fine with me. Well, I don't have to deal with that. So maybe there's going to be a few more extra tickets available for UKU fans who haven't got a chance to go out there yet. But, you know, it's a good time, and I think that our guys are going to be fired up, you know, to show that they have something to prove. You know, we tied for the title. We kind of want to get rolling again going into the NCAA tournament.
Well, let's talk about KU's path to this Big 12 tournament title. So our first game will be on Thursday evening at 6:00. We will have the winner of West Virginia and Texas Tech, correct?
Yes. Do you have that in front of you, Kevin?
No, I don't. So,
okay. Kevin made this stunning confession to me earlier.
You know what?
He said that he really doesn't understand brackets, which is kind of like learning that Superman's dead or that wrestling is not real. It's kind of like those like industry insider, your heroes aren't what you thought they were.
All right.
When you explain that you weren't bracket literate, I was just sad. If we need to get you in some sort of program to help you out through March, some sort of remedial Head Start program, I can totally help you out.
Can I have a word? Can I defend myself? Can I defend my basketball bracket honor?
Go ahead.
I'm not good without it in front of me. I can do like the 64. I'm good with that. I can do that. 1 versus 16, 2 versus 15. I can do all that. That's no problem because I've looked at a million of those. But when you start getting like crazy brackets where it's like 6 versus the 9 and then the 2 versus the 8, and I can't really, I don't know. Without looking at it, I can't put it together. If I look at it, I'm fine. But if I don't look at it, I struggle. So if that makes me less of a bracketologist, then I'm not a bracketologist.
I'm sure there's some more of you out there who struggle with this bracket illiteracy. I will be holding a class at the ECM on the University of Kansas campus.
You know, and Joe Lunardi, he has like a class that he does on this, right?
Oh, yeah, but you're going to have to take my 002 class in order to qualify for that class. That's way above your head.
Now listen, like, I told you,
this class doesn't count for credit. Like, you have to pass this one because you didn't get high enough on your ACT.
Fine. You know, I think I figured out what it is. It's not brackets. It's the buys that get me. Like, you know, so if we have spaces on the bracket, and then so who's going to play who? That's, I think, what gets me. Anyway, okay. let's get away from this. I don't want to talk about this anymore. Shut up. Okay, Big 12 tournament. KU's path. All right, since you have the bracket in front of you and I'm bracket illiterate, talk to me about KU's path to the title after Thursday night's game.
Okay, so Thursday afternoon, we'll play at 2:00, and that'll be either against West Virginia or Texas Tech, and those are the 8 and 9 seeds. So I think that's a pretty good game for us. We hit those teams late in the season and handled them very, very capably. Those teams will play on Wednesday night, so be looking for that game at 6:00 to see who we play on Thursday. If we win that game, we'll play the winner of Oklahoma or Iowa State. That's a 4-5 matchup. We've lost to Oklahoma, so if we play Oklahoma, it'd be a pretty good rubber match. Kind of, you know, show them what's up. We lost that game, but we're not going to lose another one. Or we play Iowa State, which, you know, I'll play him again. But, man, those first two matchups have been just so crazy that in a matchup, I hope we just put them away and just put all this to bed.
Yeah.
And then you got the whole other side of the bracket, you know, could come out of there. Could be Oklahoma State, could be K-State. You know, but I'll honestly watch out for Texas and Baylor because those teams are kind of firing and, you know, kind of getting things going. So who knows what's going to come out of that other side. So this tournament, I think, is up in the air, but I think that we should be the favorite. And if we're hitting, if we're fired up, I think it's ours to lose.
Yeah, at this point, I think you're right. I think you have to probably put the best chances to win with KU, but would it surprise you if someone else wins? I don't think so. I mean,
no.
This year and this Big 12, that, I mean, there's five teams that really have a legitimate chance, maybe even six teams that have a legitimate chance to win this thing. If it's not KU, who would you expect it to be? And then maybe who's your wild card?
If it's not KU, probably Oklahoma State.
Yeah, I'm with you there. And who's your wild card? Is it Texas or Baylor, as you discussed?
Maybe our side of the bracket in Oklahoma.
Really? Even after they're losing to TCU?
Yeah, that makes me reconsider a little bit, but maybe, I don't know. I'd still stick with Oklahoma.
See, I'm going to take Baylor here because Baylor seems to play well in this tournament for no reason whatsoever because they usually throw a bunch of clunkers throughout the regular season and then figure out how to, you know, kind of turn it on in March. Maybe they just stop listening to Scott Drew like at the end, and maybe they just kind of tune him out and then just go play. Just play a little better without hearing what he's saying. So I don't know, just a thought. I'm going to take Baylor as a surprise team. They are playing, you know, they're so talented. They just got to, I don't know. I don't want to talk about that game. We're done with that game. We swept it under the rug. So if KU exits early in this thing, and let's talk hypotheticals. They lose in the first or second game. They don't make it to the championship. Do your thoughts change at all about KU's chances in March? Let's say KU wins by three against West Virginia and then loses that second game. So they didn't play well the first game and then didn't play well the second game. Are you starting to be a little concerned?
I'm not necessarily concerned. It makes the path a little bit harder because we're going to be probably a lower seed, probably end up being a three, maybe a two or three if we end up on that line. So it makes it a little bit harder, but that being said, there's a lot of time in between this tournament and when the games start next week, or I guess for the NCAA tournament. I really trust in Bill Self getting these guys fired up, getting them ready to go. I don't think I would trust any other coach to get a team to play at its maximum capacity. So I think that in-between time, getting ready for the games, getting fired up, is really going to be whether this team succeeds or not. And I trust Bill Self to get him there.
Yeah, I'm with you there. All right, let's throw out your prediction for the championship game. I assume you're saying KU. So who does KU play in the championship on Saturday night?
They play K-State and they win 200 to 11.
Okay. All right. I would love to see K-State in that matchup. I mean, I don't think there's a KU fan out there that isn't cheering for that. And I don't think there's probably a ton of K-State fans that are cheering for that. I don't know about you. I think they're probably hoping they don't have to see us again. But I think it's KU, and I think it will be Oklahoma State in a game that comes down to a couple possessions late. I think KU pulls it off. All right, what do you say we transition to one of our favorite segments? Let's go to the loft and get Matt Norlander in here. What do you say?
Let's do it.
To the loft.
Yeah. All right, we'd like to welcome Matt Norlander to the Jayhawk Talk podcast. He is the editor and publisher of College Hoops Journal, as well as the writer a writer for CBSSports.com, and near and dear to our hearts, the host of CBS's Eye on College Basketball podcast. Welcome to the show, Matt.
Oh, fellas, appreciate it. Kevin, Andrew, my pleasure being on. How you guys doing tonight?
Doing great.
We could be better, though. We lost to Baylor, I'm sure you saw on Saturday. So we're not doing fantastic, but we're getting over it.
Yeah, that was one of the more bizarre ones. I actually tweeted out, who is that playing against Kansas? Because that did not look like Baylor whatsoever. But you know what? I'm not just saying this because I'm on your podcast either. It is my belief that Kansas is going to roll through the Big 12 tournament, and that game is just going to be like completely forgotten about. Kansas will get a one seed, and only the Jayhawk faithful will remember Scott Drew doing such a thing to your team.
Well, do you think that game says more about Baylor or more about the Jayhawks?
I think it says more about Baylor because I did not think Baylor was capable of that kind of game. Kansas, you can make the argument that, you know, they had the TCU stinker. This one was a bigger blowout against a better team. I think the TCU one is still much worse, even though TCU snagged one against Oklahoma over the weekend as well. But Baylor is a team that is skittish at best, but has the talent to have those kind of games. Didn't know that they had it in them to do that, though. That's probably what's going to get Baylor in, because I think they're going to win one Big 12 game. They're going to barely sneak in. Maybe they'll be a first four. How about Baylor-Kentucky as a first four matchup?
Oh, that's, man.
Rematch.
Yeah, they've already played once.
Yeah, that's something I'd like to see. You know what? They won't do it then. That's right, because the committee avoids it, does its best to avoid rematches in the first, you know, round of 64 slash first four. But maybe they both get sent into Dayton. We'll see. But yeah, I say that's more about the Bears and Kansas. I mean, you know, if for some reason, let's just say Kansas loses in the Sweet 16. Let's say let's call them a two and they fall to a three. Like, I don't know if we're going to point to the TCU and Baylor losses and say that's a reason, you know, writing was on the wall. To me, you get into tricky territory there, because a lot of it's obviously matchups. And it's, you know, these one game scenarios, small sample sizes that, yeah, sometimes there's correlation, but other times, like, the team just has a better night than you. So
right.
Kansas is a solid team, but they're a fallible team. We're well aware of that. And I'm intrigued to see what comes.
Yeah, and that's kind of the theme for the year, it seems like, that a lot of teams are fallible. We don't have one or two that, you know, really jumping out like a UNC or a Kentucky last year. It seems like it's a wide open field, and it's going to make March Madness a lot of fun. What are your thoughts on, you know, conference tournaments generally as we start to get into a lot of these high major conferences? Obviously, we've got some you know, mid-majors going on right now, but is it more for, you know, for the fans and for money, do you think coaches, you know, take it differently? Any thoughts on just on conference tournaments as we approach that this week?
Yeah, I mean, first of all, it's something that I've always wanted to write on from a big perspective, but it's a hard one to tackle because coaches are in, then they're out. Teams are in, they're out, and it's so fleeting, and the tournament's right around the corner that it's almost like, why do you want to spend so much time writing about the conference tournaments when by the time you finish it, no one cares, and we're looking ahead to the NCAAs. But that said, I think different teams and different levels approach it differently. I do want to give credit to like a team like Gonzaga, which is romping St. Mary's. Well, not romping. They're up by 12 as we record this podcast here on Monday night. But to me, like, it's a tremendous thing of pride for the Gonzaga players to have gone undefeated in the regular season, made it to the title game. And, yeah, they want to go undefeated. Like, that means a lot. That's, you know, as a player, that's got to be just an amazing feeling to play for a chance to do that, because so few teams actually do that in this era. As for why these tournaments are held, of course, it's only money and TV exposure. That's why they happen. It's the fact of the matter. I would love, you know, we're obviously going to have situations where the line is blurred, but for the clear, you know, bottom 12 conferences, okay, I think that the tournament should be held on the top-ranked team's home floor. It's not a perfect solution. A lot of teams they probably can't do it just because there's pragmatics that get in the way of that. But to me, you just want to send your best team, and there's got to be some sort of solution. You know, I'm fine with berthing them into the title game and making it one there. And, you know, my colleague Jeff Goodman had a piece up on Monday that said, you know, if you've got a team that's the number one and they get beaten out, let's go for a rubber match, you know, and improve it one more time, and then there won't be any reason to gripe. I actually think that's a really good idea, and something that all it would take is one conference to say, you know what, let's get some buzz. We can actually make this happen. There's nothing stopping us. we can get the TV spot for this, even if it's, you know, an ESPNU 11 a.m. game, however you want to do it. If all it takes is for one league to do that and take a chance, and it's all provisional. I mean, you'd have to get the upset first. And if it did, you'd have some, you know, added bonus and intrigue and a spice to conference tournament week that I'd like to see. In general, I'm in favor of the conference tournaments. I think they're just an amazing appetizer. We get a lot of games. I also think they're just good in general for casual hoops fans, because I think that's what's forgotten a lot of this is, like, a lot of college basketball fans, like, they're okay with the tournaments, but for your buddy Jeff or, you know, your buddy Greg, who, you know, he only starts tuning in after Valentine's Day, maybe not even until March. Like, these are ways for a lot of people to kind of oil their gears up for the tournament, the big one. So I'm in favor, generally speaking.
And we love it here in Kansas City. Kansas City puts on a pretty good Big 12 tournament. And, you know, maybe KU doesn't put the highest of priority on it, but the people around here just love to go.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, and you're always going to get that in areas where obviously the game is really popular. The Valley, I've never gone. It's I will go. In the next few years, I'm going to Arch Madness. There's just no way I'm not going to that. It's evident in certain spots where people take their basketball seriously and really embrace it. And so that's always going to be successful. It's always going to be a good moneymaker. And to those that want to, like, say that, you know, the big conference tournaments don't mean anything because you got these teams that that are already in, that's just a lazy viewpoint, in my opinion, because they are still playing for seeds, and seeds matter. I mean, a 3 seed is better than a 4 seed. Historical data is empirical with this. It shows that if you're a 3 seed, you win on average more than you win as if you're a 4. In fact, I think the only flip of that trend is 9s win more than 8s, I think. At least it was that a couple of years ago. I don't know if the 8s have been able to even it out. I would guess not. So, yeah, they're still playing for seeds. And number ones, like, I'm going to go to the Big East this week, and Louisville and Georgetown are going to play for a number one seed. If they run the tournament table in that tournament, either one of those are going to get a 1. So there still is stuff on the line. And the great irony is, like, to me, the conference tournament seasons have more meaning than the Bulls. I mean, there's more on the line when it comes to if you're fighting for a bid, whether it's automatic, a small league, an at-large in a big lead, in a big league, or if you're just fighting for a general, you know, you're trying to go on a run. You know, Syracuse, when it had GMAC, Jerry McNamara, go on that just crazy, crazy week back 6-7 years ago, Syracuse went from a bubble team to a number 5 seed over the course of a week. You know, what people forget is they got waxed by Billy Gillespie's 12th-seeded Texas A&M Aggies. So they kind of spent themselves in that week. But there's certainly some real estate to be gained by going on runs in these conference tournaments. And the most recent prominent evidence of that is what UConn did 2 years ago when Kemba took them to a Big East title, and then they ended up winning it all.
Right. Well, we're excited around here. It'll be interesting to see where KU ends up if they do end up winning out, as you mentioned, with Georgetown potentially, you know, running through their tournament. Would they get the 1 over KU? And you start to talk about Duke and Indiana and Gonzaga, start to wonder, you know, who ends up catching that 4th number 1 spot, but it'll be interesting. Let's talk a little bit about the NCAA tourney while we have you on here. You know, we obviously talk a lot about KU, but nice to get an outsider's perspective on some of the other teams around the country. And, you know, one of the things this time of year that's so much fun to talk about are the Cinderellas. Do you see any double-digit seeds, you know, potential 8, 9, 10, 12 seeds, the VCUs that we got to look out for this year? You know, KU has had a little trouble with those top higher seeds occasionally. Anybody right. Look out for?
Well, you know, Bucknell should be heading back to the tournament, just so you guys know.
And yeah, they got
keep a lookout.
They got a big man named Mike Muscala, who, in my opinion, should have a 10-year career in the NBA and is a more versatile big man than Withy, and I say that as someone who loves Withy, but Muscala is extremely, extremely effective. But I don't expect Bucknell to be a team that can win a couple of games. Yes, they are out there. Two ways I'll answer this. First, I will say I think the Elite Eight is going to have mostly 1s, 2s, and 3s. We might have one rogue team sneak in there, but I think, in my opinion, you know, the top 10 to 15 teams, there is a separation line there. And I don't expect any teams, or at least not a trend. Like, I don't expect 2 teams that are a 7 and an 11 to make their way to the Elite Eight. I just think that the good ones are good for a reason. Yeah, they're not epic and elite, but I think they're solid. But that said, you know, I watched, you know, Davidson, I watched teams like that. Man, Middle Tennessee State, I don't know if they're going to be able to sneak in, but they really, if they don't get in, they would have been a really good one to give them a go. And yeah, I mean, when I watch these teams, certainly there remains a strong possibility that we could have a couple of more surprises. I mean, they come every year as it is. We're aware of that. But Davidson specifically is a team, you know, that's got just they've got great coaching, first of all. Okay, Bob McKillop is one of the most respected coaches in the game, and that's kind of a generic phrase, but like I feel if you could actually quantify it, like he would probably be in the top 10 just in terms of his acumen and ability to get the most out of his players and just recruit good guys too. I mean, Davidson is a team. Jake Cohen is kind of a Euro big man that's a really solid forward, can play the five if he needs to, and then Damon Brooks is a kind of a 3-4 tweener, like true tweener, because he can lean either way. Like those two dudes are nasty. They are really, really good. And so they would be a team that they're kind of picked every year, but there's a reason.
Mm-hmm.
Like there's a reason why people like don't sleep on Davidson anymore, because they're just that good. They went 17-1 in the league. They'd be my small pick, a kind of a bigger pick. I like Colorado State out of the Mountain West. They'll only be a double digit if they lose their first Mountain West game, but they're such an amazing rebounding team. Colton Iverson is a big man who's just, he is a dude you do not want to go against. I mean, he will slap bodies with you and make life hell for every minute he's in the game. I just like what CSU has there. They would be, I'm going to have to see who they get matched up with, but they might be one at like an Elite Eight sleeper if they had the right pick, because the Mountain West is solid this year. New Mexico gets a lot of pub, and I feel like the Rams have kind of been overlooked just a little bit.
You mentioned Mike Muscala a little bit. Are there any other breakout players we should watch for? It seems like every year there's one or two, you know, transcendent figures that emerge, sort of like a Steph Curry or some of these other guys. Who do you think comes out of this tournament?
That's a great question, because it's all about different levels of what we're looking for here. You know, Nate Walters is a player at South Dakota State who I have unintentionally become the president of his fan club, and the backstory on that we don't need to get into, but it's become half tongue in cheek. But he's a really solid player for the Jackrabbits, who are not in the tournament yet, by the way. I mean, they got to win the Summit League title, and Western Illinois and North Dakota State will both give them some good run. Any of those three teams can win it, although Western Illinois is missing their big man, and so they might be a little hindered. But Walters, you know, he scored 53 earlier this year. I could totally see them as a 14 playing a 3 seed. I'm just trying to pick of who would be a good candidate. Florida's too physical. You know, if Pittsburgh won the Big East tournament, it could get a 3 seed. And yeah, I could see that happening. He could just, you know, maybe he goes off for 37. That's a good 3-point shooting team. He might be a name that people notice after a Thursday or Friday game. I don't know if they can win 2 in a row. But someone like Kendall Williams at New Mexico, you know, to college basketball diehards, that's not a new name, but you know, Williams had 46 a couple of weeks ago, good shooter. He's also good cocky, has the right attitude to be competitive and help his team, but maybe get into the heads just a little bit of the other team. He's got a potential to have a breakout kind of year. I'm trying to think of a guy at a smaller school, like truly a smaller school that might be able to have a good breakout. Like I just don't know if we're going to see anything like Steph Curry for another decade or longer. But we could stick in the Mountain West, because I think Boise State's gonna get in, and Derek Marks is a guard. I think he's a sophomore, really really strong player. Maybe isn't as effective a shooter as he needs to be, but solid at the point, and he's tremendously respected by coaches in that league. Even though a guy like Jeff Elorriaga is a very efficient shooter for Boise State, he also could be one that kind of breaks out. Boise State is sneaky good on the offensive end, and they're a team that's been okay in the Mountain West, but they have the capability of doing what VCU did 2 years ago, not in making the Final Four, but in just getting incredibly hot from 3-point range and simply just being the team that, you know what, you're watching a game, we're loving it, it's close, and all of a sudden Boise just has 4 possessions, 4 threes in a row. They're up by 6 with 2 minutes to go. The arena's rocking, and hello, suddenly they're in the Sweet 16. I'm not saying that's likely. I'm just saying they're a team that's capable of doing it.
Yeah, it sounds like someone KU probably wants to avoid, because that seems to be what gets us. What about, you know, we hear this time of year people talking about, do you want to be a higher seed versus playing closer to home? What are your feelings on that? Do you think, you know, generally most coaches would rather be closer to home than maybe try to get that higher seed and potentially better matchups?
Absolutely. And I base this off of a handful of conversations, just kind of casually, nothing for a story, with coaches, and off of the people at the NCAA at last year's mock selection committee that I went to, and them telling us ADs and coaches have explicitly said, we will take a lower seed if it means you keep us closer to home, because they don't want to travel as much. They, you know, it's such a hectic week. I think fans don't realize just how different the tournament is from a prepping, travel, scouting, media standpoint. It's different from the conference tournaments. It's a totally different beast. It's why I'm always impressed with coaches that can get their teams up and make annual runs to the second weekend or better, because it just feels everything is so different about it. And then you take into account that you're going places sometimes and you don't have that many fans there. Maybe you get a decent contingent, but you know it would have been much stronger if you had been 300 miles closer to home. So, yes, you tell a coach, listen, we'll give you a one, but you're flying 1,800 miles, or we're going to give you a two and you're going to stay, you know, within 100 miles of your campus. They're taking the two every single time. It's just a simple matter of travel and getting as much of a home court advantage as they possibly can. So, and that's something the committee, the fans need to realize. The selection committee is doing this. When they're placing these teams in the bracket, it is not a true S-curve. That doesn't really exist anymore. It's more of, okay, here's our one line, here's our two line, here's our three line, here's our four line. Let's get these teams right in place. And then there can be some swapping a two for a three if it means, you know what, if we make this team a two and we make this team a three and it benefits both of them geographically, they're going to do that. I still think we're a few years away from that being in the collective consciousness of college basketball fans. They just haven't put that together yet, because it's been the emphasis on protecting 1, 2, 3, and 4 seeds officially, and they do protect the 5, but it's not in the guidelines, but they do that. That is still relatively new to the process. It'll be a few more years before people that's the ultimate motive there with the top line.
The hot button issue in Kansas City anyway has been, a lot of bracketologists have been putting Missouri in the 8-9 game against a KU, or in the 7-10 game against KU in Kansas City. Now, I think that could be just for page clicks. It could be just to kind of stir the pot a little bit, get people fired up around here. But do you see that happening? Could that be something that the selection committee would take into consideration, or would that just happen? Or would that have to happen randomly?
I mean, to be brief here, the bracketing process, whether you're doing a mock bracket and you have to follow the rules, because you're trying to do this on the up and up and show people, okay, this is my best guess at what the committee would do if we did it today. So you got to abide by, you know, just everything from geography to avoiding first round matchups, that kind of stuff. Once you shake out a bracket and you kind of double check your homework and make sure, like, sometimes Missouri playing in an 8-9 game against Kansas and Kansas City, it just naturally happens. That said, the committee is aware of these kind of things, and I'm not going to speak for them here, but I think they do their best to avoid any awkward, specifically round of 64 and sometimes round of 32s. Sometimes it's unavoidable, because sometimes you're going to have certain teams that are good in certain years, and it's just a matter of where the sites are, and you can't please everyone. There is no perfect equation. The Missouri principle, I don't think, is going to crop up, because, I mean, you'd have to have a perfect. You'd have to have Kansas not win the Big 12, and you'd have to have Missouri slink out to be a 7 or 8, and I just don't think they're going to do that. So that should not be an issue. But if it does, I know some KU fans might want to just send up a signal and really get cynical with it, but that's not going to be the case. And I just don't think they'll put Kansas in that kind of position anyway, because you want to give the higher team a little bit of geographical advantage there. Not an overwhelming one necessarily, but, you know, you can't stop Kansas fans from you know, buying up all the tickets.
Yeah, that would be pretty wild around here. Talk about a hot ticket.
Oh, well, I'll tell you, I'd love to see it. Whether if it only got to a Sweet 16, this is stuff that would make for just great copy. I root for those kind of clashes in the tournament because, to be honest, a lot of coaches are just too stubborn to schedule certain games. And I'm not directly referencing Self in Missouri. It's nothing about that. I'm just talking about in general. A lot of coaches get very bureaucratic with who they schedule when and how and where. And the tournament is a way to wash away that. And it's like, and that's when karma can come home to roost sometimes.
We see that around here with KU and Wichita State, for instance. You know, Wichita State wants to play KU and K-State but you know, the big boys don't want to play them in Wichita.
That's totally lame, by the way. Step up and do it. I'm sorry. Step up and do it. Only three D1 teams in that state. Bill Self isn't losing his job if he drops the occasional game to Wichita State. Step up and do a home and home.
You'll get no argument here. I got one for you. What about, regardless of bracket and matchups and anything like that, if I gave you three teams to choose from and I'll take the field, who are your three teams that you think have the best chance to win this thing come April?
I'm taking Duke. They're kind of the obvious one, and I want to see what Duke does in the SEC tournament, because we're getting to a nice little sweet spot here where Duke's really good, haven't lost without Ryan Kelly, and so when Duke loses, it's all the more sweeter. Not that I root for Duke to lose. I speak on behalf of the nation. The better Duke is in the regular season and the higher the expectation, and then, you know, the slower and more beautiful the fall for a lot of people that like to see Duke lose. So it's coming to that kind of point again where Duke is considered not a lock for the Final Four, but it's like hasn't lost without Ryan Kelly. So they would be one. I would take Louisville, and I can't believe I'm doing that, but after the three game slide, and you know, they dropped that five overtime game to Notre Dame. Sorry, I just had a mild brain fart there. They've just reeled off wins, and they've kind of fallen off the radar. But I trust any team that's got the number one KenPom defense, and Louisville has that. Those teams usually do well. If not number one, if you're top five, you know, history shows in the KenPom era, as I like to refer to it, you know, 02, 03 and beyond, you've got a pretty good shot. And then I can't take Indiana because I bet my colleague Jeff Goodman in Indiana wouldn't make the Final Four. So I can't go with them. I'm telling you, I'm going Michigan, and I'm the only one left, dude. People are bailing on Michigan. I think they're too young. Not reliable defensively. To me, I still like what they got. Trey Burke could be the player of the year. And so if you give me Duke, Louisville, and Michigan, and you the field, I'm not going to feel great about it, but those are the three that I would take in that order to win it all.
Before we move on to some KU stuff, because we got to get some Jayhawk stuff before we go, when we're watching games in between the Big 12 here, we're going to be at the bar across the street of the Power and Light District. Point us in the direction of what games we should be watching in other conferences. You mentioned you're going out to the Big East. What's going to be the big stuff going on this weekend?
Oh, man. Well, yes, Big East is going to be, you know, I'm sure a lot of Midwest and West Coast people get so fed up with just like the romanticizing of the Big East. But I'm telling you guys, like, and MSG is overrated. Like, it is. It smells awful. Like, and they've renovated it and it still smells awful. And there are many overrated aspects to it. But I tell you, I take that subway down to New York City and there's just a buzz there. So many fan bases out around Manhattan. Like, it is a genuinely cool scene. Like, just no doubt about it. The Big East is worth following because this is the final year as we know it. And, you know, you've got Louisville, Georgetown playing for number one seeds. Syracuse is on its way out. Jim Boeheim could be up for another epic press conference moment. all looking forward to that, I think. So I would keep an eye on that. To me, the Pac-12 largely isn't worth watching, just from a casual standpoint. Like, yeah, if it's a good game, turn it on, watch it. You know, obviously, or if Washington State out of nowhere winds up in the title game, then yeah, give it a go and see if we've got a bid thief there. But I dodge that. The Big Ten goes without saying, you got to watch it. I mean, there's just too many good teams there, too many teams that are capable of making the second weekend and will make the second weekend. I think we're just going to get good entertainment. And the Big Ten tournament's actually been pretty solid over the past few years. Maybe one of the most reliable tournaments. The ACC should be okay. You want to see what Miami does. You actually want to keep an eye on NC State, one of the most underperforming teams of the year. And some of that might be on the media. You know, we say these teams are preseason favorites, and sometimes we're right, sometimes we're wrong, and blame can be found in the middle oftentimes a lot with that. So I'm intrigued by that. Plus, I haven't bought into North Carolina all year, and some did last week, and then North Carolina got pasted at home by Duke. Just want to see what they do. They could slide. Like, if they lost their first ACC tournament game, which I don't think they will, but if they did, they actually might slide into an 8-9 game, and so then you've got the tantalizing prospect of Carolina going up against a one seed in the round of 32, and while I don't think Carolina would have a chance, makes for good fodder. And then, you know, I don't need to school you guys on the Big 12. You know what you're talking about there. I'm missing a big one, though. I feel like I'm missing a
SEC.
There we go. Oh, that's why I'm forgetting, because it's
yeah.
SEC. stay away at all costs and watch the Mountain West and watch the Mountain West tournament instead, because the Mountain West is probably going to send five teams as long as Boise State wins a game. New Mexico, Colorado State, UNLV, who is an extremely talented but underperforming team, kind of similar to NC State, Boise State, and San Diego State. Jamal Franklin's a solid player. That's going to be a fun one. I don't any of those five can win it. Now, I'll say any of the four. I don't think Boise State can win it. And New Mexico is going to be playing for a two. So that should be plenty entertaining. And the Mountain West has been pretty decent in the past few years in terms of tournament play. And it's among the best it's ever been this year. So that would be my advice. And then you got the casual small ones. I mean, it just depends who gets to the title game. You know, we'll see what happens in those. And in the A-10, I'll be at as well. And that's just kind of got the Butler and VCU factor. We'll see what they do. Should be a lot of fun over in Brooklyn. And I look forward to hopping back and forth between one island and the other, Manhattan and Brooklyn, covering that this week.
Nice. That sounds like a blast. Okay, so let's get to some KU questions. You know, this is a little Jayhawk podcast, and it's always nice to get an outsider's perspective, because we get, you know, pretty stuck down here in some groupthink in Kansas about our team. And so, you know, from an outsider's perspective, you know, someone who doesn't really have a dog in the fight, you know, what are your thoughts on this KU team this year? You know, regular season, 26-5. Played, you know, to I think they're what, number six now rank. I mean, what are your thoughts, just kind of generally speaking, about these guys?
Yeah, well, I've long been a fan of Withy Face and all things Jeff Withy. I've talked with my buddy CJ Moore, who now is a lead writer for Bleacher Report. Mm-hmm. You know, obviously he's done plenty of great stuff on Kansas, and I remember talking to him in the preseason just about, you know, charting just how effective Withy is. I think that's so vital. I was hoping Withy would be a little bit better offensively in terms of his progression this year. I think if he was, you'd probably have heard me say Kansas is third on that list that you asked me to reel off the top three teams. Listen, Macklemore is a joy to watch. Part of me is bummed that he's going to the draft. You know, he won't say it until the season's over, but that dude is gone, as he should be. Too talented. Right. We all are aware of his background. Go get your money, kid. You've earned it. And just hope that he has a good run in him. In general, I do not hold the TCU and Baylor losses against Kansas too much. You know, I know that we saw the loss to TCU being this unprecedented turn in terms of, like, has any team ever had a loss this bad and come back and won a national championship? And my response to those kind of things are like, okay, let's make note of it, but, you know, records are records until they aren't. You know, they fall as they fall at some time or another. And just because Kansas had just a miserable night back in early February, I think it was, that doesn't mean they can't win at all. We'll like their chances to at least get to the Elite Eight, barring some rip your hair out play from Elijah Johnson, which I don't think we'll get. I think he's been pretty vital. But the national perspective on Kansas is Bill Self is so automatic at this point. Everyone takes it for granted. This team is pretty balanced. It's the point guard play has shown signs of improvement overall. Macklemore's a stud. Withy's been pretty vital. This will be a team everyone takes seriously. I think the defense is underappreciated for how good it is. I think it's pretty damn impressive. And if you can just get, like, I find it hard to trust Tharp. If you can get something out of Kevin Young, I thought Perry Ellis would be a little better than he has been. And you just hope for a big moment from Rutherford, just in terms of senior leadership, you know, that kind of deal. That tends to be necessary minimally in one NCAA tournament game. So if you can get that from him, then they've got a decent shot at getting it to Atlanta.
Let's stay along the same lines. What do you think about the Big 12 generally? I mean, we kind of had this narrative at the beginning of the season that the Big 12 was down and the Big 12 was strong, or wasn't as strong as it was before. But do you think that's still true? I mean, there's three teams in the top 15. You know, Texas is down a little bit. West Virginia is certainly not what they thought. We thought they'd be, but what's your opinion on the Big 12 just generally going into the tournament?
Yeah, I think the Big 12's changed. I remember for so long, it seemed like the Big 12, you could just, you could truly slice it in half and say, you know, it's almost, you just take the top part, it's delicious, and the bottom part's rotten, and just, it's just awful. And it hasn't been like that as of late. I think it's an okay conference. I'd probably put it, I don't know, maybe fifth overall, I guess. I don't know where it falls in terms of the rankings for RPI Sager and Ken Palm. I have not looked at that in a while, but yeah, Kansas, you've got a title contender in Kansas. You've got a Final Four contender in Kansas State, but I'm always fascinated by perspective. Like, people won't consider Kansas State a Final Four contender until they actually get there. You just got to break through. You got to break molds and shift people's views on you as a program. And until they do that, they'll be seen like Pittsburgh in that kind of way. Oklahoma State's a team that can have a postseason that is almost Carmelo Anthony light. I don't think Marcus Smart is going to the national title game. But I do think Marcus Smart is good enough to get them to an Elite Eight, whereas without Marcus Smart, Oklahoma State's probably not in the tournament. He's just that composed, that good, and I don't know what seed the Pokes are going to end up with, but he's just that good, man. And they got pros on that team. They can show you some pretty good stuff. I mean, sometimes I watch him play, and I'm like, oh, this is really nice. I'm enjoying what I'm seeing, especially defensively. I mean, that's... I feel like a lot of people don't appreciate a lot of defense in the Big 12, because generally speaking, the Big 12 isn't known for a lot of defense outside of Kansas. And then beyond that, yeah, it gets tricky. I mean, Oklahoma, Baylor, and Iowa State are the only three factors there. I'm going to say all six get in. I'm going to say Baylor's not going to Baylor on us again. But you know what? Baylor's going to go Baylor. So whatever. They're going to make me look bad, and it's fine. Iowa State just needs one good one, one more good one, and then it gets in, and it doesn't get to get haunted by Kansas all off season, because you guys know, I mean, minimally, that team should be 1-1 right now against your team.
Yeah, I was at the game in Ames. I was one of about 5 KU fans there because the weather was really bad, and yeah, I couldn't get out of that building fast enough. It was crazy. You're bringing up some old wounds. I mean, you talk about McNamara and Carmelo and Bucknell. You're killing
this here. You know what's interesting is I'm not even intentionally doing this. And so my apologies to all the forthcoming hate comments. The internet is a wonderful place. And I don't intentionally, Bradley, By no means am I trying to Northern Iowa. I'm not trying to do anything like this of the sort, man. I'm just so appreciative, Farouk Manesh, of coming on your podcast and having a chance to talk about the Jayhawks.
Little Farouk Manesh drop. That's just what we need.
I was doing a little Kevin O'Neill from Saturday Night Live way back in the day. Do you remember? Do you recall the skits with the subliminal messaging?
Right.
So, yeah.
Just having a little fun.
Killing us.
All right. Well, let's get it back to a little positive KU thinking. I want to get your opinion on this 9 straight regular season titles for Bill Self and KU, and kind of, I guess, you know, it's so weird around here. I mean, literally, I think people take them for granted because they've won 9 straight, and it's kind of hard to put that into perspective or really, I don't know. I guess what I'm trying to ask is there any, give us an outsider's perspective of that accomplishment and that feat and maybe where it stands, you know, in comparison to some other, I guess, college basketball feats in our lifetime. Is there anything that really kind of comes close?
I don't know, because I mean, from a coaching perspective, that's what we got to compare it to. And I mean, damn, it can't be overstated how not automatic it is just because you're the coach of Kansas. That means you win Big 12 tournaments and Big 12 titles. Like, that just, it doesn't come to you that easy. And you look at just look at what Calipari is doing at Kentucky. You know, good coach, won a national title, number one recruiting class, and can't even win in a really bad SEC year. I love that self hire from day one. And even when the tournament losses came early and were upsetting, was always in Self's corner. And I think until the title came, and I actually think even after that, and you guys have a better grasp on this, but I still sense that, like, for whatever ridiculous reason, like, there are Kansas fans who have not, maybe now they do, but even after like 2009, 2010, when these losses came to small conference schools, it was like, yeah, you got us our title, but we're still losing to teams that we shouldn't in the tournament. Like, you don't get it. Only one team wins the tournament. This is not guaranteed to anyone. You see the struggles that all sorts of big time programs have gone through. I mean, Carolina's had a couple of putrid years, even after winning titles. We've seen what UCLA's had to endure. Again, we mentioned what Kentucky is. And even Duke, I mean, Duke was a 2 that lost to a 15 last year. And so for Self to just be so automatic in the Big 12, which isn't ever the best conference in college hoops, but is never as bad as the Pac-12 was last year, the SEC is this year, and to minimally get the title and most times, you know, get a standalone, dude, cherish it and let that man coach your program for as long as possible, because what he does is just ridiculous. I mean, I just can't picture Kansas ever not making an NCAA tournament as long as he's there. And to me, the kicker is, I remember before the 2011-2012 season, we were kicking around ideas, storylines in the preseason, me and my colleagues, and we were like, you know, take a look at Kansas. They probably should have a down year. You know, maybe if they're lucky, they'll be in an 8-9 game. And what happens? Like, they go and play for the freaking national title. I mean, it's just unbelievable.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, also around these parts, you know, we're pretty close to Manhattan, Kansas, down I-70, where K-State resides. And tonight they held basically a pep rally for their shared title in the Big 12 as a result. We tied 14-4, and in the Big 12, as you know, if you share titles, you can claim the title. How many people, I mean, with this 9 straight talk and all this stuff with, you know, with Bill Self winning all these championships, do you think people around the country even know K-State got a share? Like, it seems kind of, I mean, I don't mean to troll K-State fans, but I'm asking legitimately. I mean,
probably not, actually. Yeah. Because, you know, they didn't have a big moment on national TV. They didn't get, you know, the stage Indiana got. People don't care as much about K-State as it is. Now, Bruce has done a good job. And I'll be interested to see what he does with that program over the next couple of years. But, dude, let them have their moment.
Absolutely. Like, no.
Yeah. Let them have it, because they're a solid team this year. And and give them credit. Like, I go back to, like, there are just certain aspects of the game with coaches and their jobs and their duties. Like, it's just not a given. I know they aren't his players, but it doesn't mean that you're going to win automatically. Like, don't see what Frank Haith did last year and what Bruce Weber did this year and think that stuff is supposed to happen, because it's not guaranteed. And I really doubted K-State at the start of the year. I thought they would be in sort of an 8-9-10 seed situation, and that's not the case at all. So credit Weber for being a coach that got it together. And Magruder is a great player. Like, I'll say he's a great Big 12 player, to kind of narrow it down there. But you know, they kind of do it by committee a little bit. And the nation doesn't really know what K-State is, because Frank Martin's gone and that aspect of their identity has left them. And so this is their chance to kind of make some more noise. I mean, if they were to – I still think Kansas is going to roll to the Big 12 tourney title. But if they were able to get it, they'd have a shot probably at the best 3 and some good prime location there. And we'll see what happens.
Well, let's close with some predictions here. I don't mean to put you on the spot, but you know, we talk about KU's tournament chances, and obviously without seeing the seeding, without seeing the matchups and things like that, it's really impossible. But throw out where you think KU will end up. Is it an Elite Eight team, a Final Four team, a Sweet 16 team? You know, are they going to be in the championship? Throw out your best guess. It's maybe the dart will catch the dartboard.
Well, I think I will see Kansas as a number one seed lose in the Elite Eight in person. I will be in Dallas, and without knowing matchups, just kind of a swing in the dark, I will forecast Kansas with a heavy contingent of Jayhawk faithful going down to a to-be-determined team out there in Jerry's spaceship from Neptune, which, by the way, I'm not looking for. I like, trust me, love my job, and I will be in awe of getting to cover every single tournament game that I get to do. But from a purely basketball perspective, I'm not looking forward to having to watch players have to play in such a massive, massive place. So that's my guess. I don't know who they. I don't know who they'd get. I mean, I think they'll be the one, though. I think they're going to win the Big 12 tournament and earn it. But New Mexico probably can't get that 2 now. They're actually closer to Dallas than San Jose, or LA, I should say, for the second weekend. So I don't know who would get the 2 out there, but there's no guarantee. But yeah, 1 seed losing the Elite Eight in a good one. That's my pick.
All right.
Which is what happened in San Antonio to VCU, right? So there we go.
Right. Yeah, that'd be a pretty good year. We're certainly happy with getting that share of the title. I think around here people try to quantify the regular season and then see what happens in the postseason. So, well, hey, we really appreciate you coming on, man. This has been great.
It's been fun.
Yeah, we big fans of the CBS Eye on College Basketball podcast. So if you guys out there listening have not checked that out, be sure to do so. Anywhere else we can find you, Matt?
Oh, man. Wandering the streets, singing show tunes to myself. No, the podcast is a good time. We'll try and get some good guests on there. A whole slam of them, national stuff. If you're into that, be sure. And then just, you know, Eye on College Basketball, if you don't mind, college hoops tweets mixed in with miserable, poorly timed jokes and the occasional music talk, then at Matt Norlander, you can follow me. And fellas, my pleasure being on. Enjoy this great appetizer to the tournament, and Selection Sunday will be here just in a few nights sleep, all right?
All right, absolutely. Hey, we appreciate it, Matt. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
All right, well, thanks again to Matt for joining us. That was pretty cool. What do you think, Andrew?
It was great. Did not agree with his prediction, though. I want to make that clear.
Not a fan of the Elite Eight?
I think we're going to get to the Elite Eight, but then again, I think we're going to go further, obviously.
I like where your head's at. I didn't like the subliminal message part, but...
Yeah, you know what? Whatever. Just got to learn to deal with it.
Yeah. Well, that was fun. Hey, thanks again to Matt, and we will see you guys out at the P&L down in the Sprint Center.
The new Jayhawk Talk Luxury Box will be, I believe, in section 221. I'm making that up.
Part is there actually are luxury boxes.
Yeah, but more likely it's going to be wherever I can sneak down onto the first level.
Exactly.
Convince my dad to move down to the first level. So that's where the new Jayhawk Talk Luxury Box is going
to
be.
Yeah, be sure to give us a shout out on Twitter, and we will... maybe try to catch up with some people down there, have a little Jayhawk talk, meet and greet. We will certainly be throwing back a few beers in the P&L when the games are not on, or when there's a game that maybe you don't really feel like watching. So shoot us up on there, and we appreciate you guys listening. Thanks again, and rock chalk.
With Hollywood Cole, I'm with Marla G, bro, flying Hollygrove chicks to my Hollywood shows. And I wanna tell you something that you probably should know. This that Slumdog Millionaire Bollywood flow, and my real friends never hearing from me. Fake friends write the wrong answers on the